You know what I just learned 3 days ago? Schizophrenics do not get cancer. I mean, doesn't that just bowl you over? That may not seem like much to you, but I'm thirsty for news, I guess. It's like they get cancer, but in 1/10 the ratio of the rest of us. The rest of you. I don't get it either. Now listen to this. Cancer, what is this thing called cancer? Cancer is an energy, a psychic energy system operating within a context in which it has no reference to the whole. It is some kind of disease process that gets inside of us and has no regard for the whole. And so it will just gobble up everything and destroy itself in the process. Isn't that what cancer is? And so cancer is really a very stupid kind of life form, because it destroys everything around it, and in the process it destroys itself. And how do you work with a cancer in the body? And this is something I've been researching and working with and studying the stuff they're doing at the Simonton Cancer Institute and so on. When some human beings are able to find their own connection to the whole, you find tumors going away. We're using visualization processes, the ability to use these thoughts in such a way to visualize ourselves as part of all of humanity and connected to it, and we can send tumors away. Now, what about schizophrenics? Schizophrenics are exactly the opposite. A cancer virus is a virus that is within a contained system. A schizophrenic is within a system that is totally dissipated. I mean, it's got energy for everything. There's no containment at all. It's like, blah, 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 over here and over there and wild. And one of the things that a guy named Richard Moss, who has written a book called The Eye That Is We, which I really recommend, is really a beautiful book, The Eye That Is We, was a real conscious being, a real beautiful man, has suggested is that we put cancer patients with schizophrenics in the same wards. See that what one does, that is that contained unit with no reference to the whole, is killing, and so is the extreme of dissipating energy. And bringing those two together in some way is a healing. Interesting notion, isn't it? Very exciting notion. Read The Life of a Cell. It's a beautiful little book. And when you look inside of a cell, you'll see little protons and neutrons and little atoms, whatever, all the things that are inside this cell, whether it's a rhinoceros's nose or whether it's your ear or whether it's a hair or whether it's a piece of dust or whatever. But just assume it's you, a tiny little cell inside of you. What holds the cell together? What makes the cell stay together? Do you ever think of that? Why doesn't your nose slide off? Don't you ever think of that? You got to start thinking of these things. How come your arm always hangs there, you know? How come it doesn't just fall off one day? It's always there. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. What's making these cells stay together? Well, scientists can't even answer that. They get to the thing that they call the source, that within every living cell there's something called the source. A heart starts beating inside a mother's womb 7 or 8 weeks after conception, and we have no idea. It's a total mystery to us. Not a physician on the planet can figure it out. Where was that life before? Where did it come from? Where does it go when it's not doing that? And what made that heartbeat out of nothing? How does that work? What is that? And how come in that tiny little drop of protoplasm is everything you need? I mean, it's your elbows in there, that hair that's growing over here that you don't want anymore. That's in that little drop there. And you can't stop it. You can't reverse it. It's all in there. The growth that has taken place in you, since it's like it's all in that tiny little speck that you can't even see inside that cell. Life is such a mystery, this form business, until you begin to see that that isn't what life is. Like the person who eats the package and focuses on the package instead of the content. The package is your form. The real you, you wouldn't want to toss away, and so many of us do. Now, when there is harmony within a cell, within a tiniest cell you can find in your body, what happens to the cell adjacent to it? It cooperates with that cell, doesn't it? It cooperates with that cell. It doesn't eat it up. It doesn't try to hurt it. It doesn't try to destroy it. It is at peace. It is at harmony. And so harmony and cooperation become the essence of life. When there is not ease or serenity or peace within a cell, that is, when there is dis-ease or disharmony or an absence of serenity or arrogance rather than peace or aggressiveness, what happens to the cell next to it? Gobbles it up. Gets aggressive. It eats it up. It has no reference to the whole. Something that has no reference to the whole means that it has no regard for the whole. Like, you have many, many life forms on you that are ugly. If you look at them, look inside your eyelid and study it, you'll see millions of little life forms. And then you magnify them. They got claws and they got teeth and they're in your eyelid and there's millions of them. But they have a reference to the whole. They don't gobble up your eyeball. You know, they don't say, I think I'll take an ear today. They don't do that. They stay where they belong and they have a reference to the whole. And they work in conjunction with or in harmony with the whole, as do all the bugs in the lining of your stomach and in your intestine and your toenails inside your nose. They all have a reference to the whole, but cancer doesn't do that, does it? So it will eat up each cell because it doesn't have harmony within. And what will it do to itself? It'll destroy itself, won't it? A cancer in society is the same way. A cancer in society is one of us who is one cell, who doesn't have ease within itself, has no reference to the whole, that is all the rest of us or all of society, and doesn't see itself as part of all of you. And it will gobble up all of those around it until it destroys itself, doesn't it? So what is the answer to a cancer in our body and a cancer in our society? Is to get harmony within. And when you get harmony within, you cooperate with the cell next to you in order to save yourself. Now that's just like a little mini lesson in metaphysical philosophy. Now imagine me up here with you making yourself into a cell for a second. So that you've got all these tiny little cells and this philosophy applies. But remember, it's all relative. That's what Einstein taught. It's all relative. Nietzsche said, all things being relative, what time does Munich stop at this train? That'll give you something to think about. But it's all relative. Is a tiny little cell, is it bigger or smaller than this cell that is you, that is totality that is you? No. Not in a universe that is endless. Where does the universe end? Is there a wall there? Is there a cliff? Who put the wall there? What's on the other side? How thick is it? How far down does it go? I mean, how could there be an end to the universe? It's impossible, isn't it? Does it end? How could it end? And so in an endless universe, a cell this big or a cell as big as you, that's just a question of context for you. Very much like if there is such a thing as eternity, and there's no such thing as time, because how can there be time in eternity? If it goes forever, what do you need time for? So in that sense, 8 hours of sleeping or 80 years of living are identical, aren't they? In a context of eternity, 8 hours of sleeping and 80 years of living are identical when everything goes forever. That really helps you to see what happens when you awaken. And so I'm asking you to awaken, you know, while you're here. And look at yourself as a cell. Now imagine we can all just stand back and see all of humanity, 6.5 billion of us, or 6 billion of us. Is that what we have now? And here is this huge mosaic that constitutes all of humanity. And it's a puzzle. And it has 6 billion pieces in it, but there's one missing. And you can get back far enough and see it. Where do your eyes go? Right to the missing piece. The totality of that life form is not complete without that missing piece, is it? That's how important you are. You make all of humanity complete. You are the I that is we. Just like the I that is we, that is inside of your pancreas, you are alive with life. All the different bacteria and all the trillions of cells and so on. And it's like you walk around all day long, you think, gee, I'm an individual all by myself and I'm an island and all that. And you got zillions of little things inside of you going. And without them, you can't make it. And when something comes along inside your organism that no longer has a reference to the whole, isn't connected to the whole, you're eliminated and so is it. Aren't you? Disharmony, then, becomes the thing that destroys us. And as long as you are in harmony and positive, and when people say, well, positive thinking is just a crock, it isn't in the sense that a positive thought keeps you in harmony with the universe, and a negative thought keeps you away from it. Because we are thought, and the universe is thought, the fastest vibration, we have the capacity to either destroy or create, and we're the only things that do. That's why we're different than a pig and a horse, because we have a mind. And that mind is part of the universal mind. That unity, that oneness, is not any different. Like, I am as connected to you, but just because I'm 10 feet away from you, I am still a part of this totality called humanity, just like the bug that is 8 feet away from me down in my toenail, which seems so distant from me, but is still a part of me, is real as well. It's all one. So that oneness, that universalness, is not just some speculation. You connect to it all. And if all of us have harmony within us, gentle harmony within us, and we're flowing with the universe, it's just the most powerful thing in the world. And if you have that within you, then you will cooperate with the cell next to you, just like the cell in your body does. The same thing. But all you have to do is have harmony within you. Now, how do you get harmony within you? How it gets inside of you is through your thinking. So if you don't like the anger and the bitterness and the hatred and the fear and the stress that is coming out of you, you can't be putting responsibility for that on the instrument or on the external thing. You have to say, that's what's inside. And why did I put it inside? And if someone sends you hate, and you only have love inside, then that's all you'll have to give away. And not only that, but you'll help diffuse the hate. It's really hard to hate somebody who sends you back love. It's hard to fight with somebody who doesn't want to fight. I had this really stunning realization one day when I was running, and I saw someone about 30 yards ahead of me who was running. And I was thinking about this concept of the unified life and that we're all one, and seeing the big picture, and seeing ourselves as all connected, and that we all come from a oneness. And because we're so stuck on our separateness, and I was looking at this runner some yards ahead of me, thinking, how could it be that I am connected to that person? I don't know his name, I don't know anything about him. How could there be any connection between us? It was like this thing dawned on me that I am already an I that is we. In other words, I have many different life forms on me. In my eyelids, I have thousands of bacteria, in my pancreas, in my ears, and all over me, I have like thousands of these different life forms. And yet I think of myself as a singular unit, but I am made up of a lot of life, a lot of stuff that is alive. So if you can get back far enough, again, it's always a question of perspective. If you could leave Earth plane, and you can only do that in thought, and look down and try to see humanity, you would really see one body. I mean, if you could get away far enough, you would see, and it would look, as you get closer and closer and closer, just like as you get closer and closer with a microscope, into a raindrop. A raindrop looks like a raindrop until you start examining it closer and closer and closer, and then you see whole universes within one section of it that have never even had any contact with the other section of it. And so, well, that's the perspective you have to get on us all being connected. We only see it from this very tiny perspective. Now, how you can apply this in your life is just to remind yourself that just because there's a distance between you and somebody else doesn't mean that there's not a connection. That's the beauty of thought again. It wasn't, what, an hour ago that someone here at the studio said something to me about her father. And I said to her, well, get me your father's address and I'll send him a copy of one of my books. And she said, oh, he would really like that. And then she started talking about her aunt. And she was doing like a little imitation and it was really funny. And she said, oh, my aunt just loves you. And she lives down in Florida. She said, she loves you. And I said, well, get me her address and I'll send her one too. I'd be happy to. And she didn't say anything at that moment, but then as she came to go to lunch with us, she said, you're not going to believe this, but my father called right after I talked to you, and he gave me my aunt's address, which I didn't have before. And she said, isn't that a coincidence? And I said, that isn't any more of a coincidence than that we've been talking about this very thing right here for the last several hours here in the studio in Chicago today, that there is a connection, and that you'll see it when you believe it. And all I suggest to you is that you try it. If you pull into a gas station and somebody is right up ahead of you and they're parked in a place where you think you should be, and if they were only up at the pump a little further away, then you would be able to be happy and they would be able to be happy. Don't tell yourself that. See them as being exactly where they are, that you're connected to them, and treat them that way so that you don't treat them with anger. You accept it. It's always acceptance. It's openness and acceptance. What you do is you just pull up in front of them and back your car up a little bit and use that pump. Don't treat that person as if they were separate from you. Treat them as if they were a part of you, because they are. It's just that you can't see the perspective. You will be able to see that perspective. You'll get that when you leave this form that you're so attached to and go into another dimension. You'll see all of humanity as one. You are one of the pieces of this puzzle called humanity. And if you are missing from it, or if you're incomplete, or if you're not in harmony, then you make all of humanity incomplete.
And that's exactly how important you are as a person. And if you just start thinking like that, that everybody out there that you run into is somehow, in some way, connected to you, you stop being antagonistic toward them, because you know that if you got antagonistic toward the microbes that live inside the lining of your large intestine and just didn't want them there and said, oh, I'm going to do everything I can to get them out of there, that would kill you. You literally need that life, that I, that is we, the self-contained unit that is comprised of all of life. You have to have all of that. It's equally true on a different level for all of humanity. And you start seeing everybody like that. And before long, you'll start seeing the connections. They'll start being there, but only when you believe it. A lot of studies have been done on the difference in business between leaders and followers, or what I think of as highly functioning people, and normals, or neurotics, if you will. There are two things that really separate them out, and they're related to this business about enlightenment is the way. One, it seems to me, that is most important, is that a leader is someone who sees the connection to the whole, the oneness, the unity. And followers rarely do. And you can get leaders from people who are in positions of followers if you look for these two qualities. The first is the seeing the big picture, if you will, or the connection to the whole. Leaders always seem to see that. Whereas followers, if you've got a large corporation within a department, the follower or the normal or the neurotic, whatever you want to call them, is somebody who only sees their job and what they have to do. So they get trained to do this particular thing, and they don't really see how it impacts on the next department. And on the next department, and on the entire company, and on the entire corporate structure. They're not able to see that. They will say things like, it's not my department. I don't do those kind of things. It's not my responsibility. You have to go to the accounting department to get at that. Or you'll have to call shipping, or whatever it may be. And they stay that way. It's like they have that quality, and they almost stay that way their entire lives. There's no connection to the whole. Whereas a leader will see that everything that a person does within a department, not only how it affects them in the department, but how it affects the next department, and how it affects the entire business, and how it affects the profit picture, and so on. And so you will see leaders being conscious of the entire business unit. And that person will almost always elevate up to a point where they get to the top of the business, or in positions of leadership, because they're not just narrowly looking at how what I do affects just me. The second thing is that leaders, as opposed to followers, are people who see the long-range effect of everything that is being done. They don't look at just how I'm acting today. For example, if you're getting on an airplane and a flight attendant is rude to a customer, the leader, if they're sitting there looking at that, or even if they're a flight attendant who has these leader qualities, not only sees how that impacts on the entire organization, the entire airline, but they see how that impacts on future business as well. A year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, if I have a bad experience with a person on an airline that turns me off to them, it isn't that individual that I'm going to be turned off to, because they're just out of my life now. So the next time I'm going to make a reservation, I'm going to pick a different airline if there's one available. I might do that for 10 years. So that one tiny moment of truth that you have as a follower with a customer, if that person doesn't see the whole and doesn't also see the long range, that will affect them dramatically. And leaders always seem to know that. And so they're not just being polite and service-oriented and kind and decent to people because that's what they've been trained to do. They are being that way, first of all, because that's the way they are. That's the way they think. And as a result of the way they think, they see their connection to not only the organization, and the future of the organization, they see a bigger picture. And that's really what this is about, this whole program, what we're talking about here. That's what the whole thing is about. It's like seeing the biggest picture of all, that how you behave towards your fellow man not only affects you and them and the organization and the profit picture a year from now or 2 years from now, but it affects all of us. It affects all of mankind. It's that big a picture that I'm trying to get at here. Yes, there are little tiny segments that we may be more interested in. But that makes us followers, too, when you think about it. I mean, if you're only thinking about your airline, or you're only thinking about your company, and how their behavior impacts on the organization or in the future, then you're still limiting yourself, because it also impacts on your city or your community, and it impacts on your country, and it impacts on the world, and it impacts on all of humanity, and it impacts on the universe as well. I work for myself. I'm not in anybody else's business. I see the biggest picture of all, that that ripples throughout all of humanity. And you can bring it back down to apply these principles in your daily business and in your family and in your relationship, but you can expand them outward as well, so that you begin to see that every negative act, every hostile act, everything that is not in harmony that you do, every person who is not in harmony, that person cannot cooperate with the person next to him. He will want to gobble them up like a cancer. And when they are in harmony, and enough of us get into harmony, then it impacts on the entire planet. So we have to be able to extend our vision. If we're thinking of ourselves as leaders, it's one thing to be a great leader within your corporation, or even within your department, or even within your own family. But another thing completely to be a great leader of mankind. And we all have to see ourselves that way. We have to extend out as far as we can and back down as small as we can. And that's how it impacts on everything and everyone.
This is the end of Side 10. Please fast forward the tape to cue up Side 9 for your next presentation.